The Nine Years Podcast is brought to you in association with Freddie Flaxman. All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 300 of the 9 Years Podcast. Apologies to the artists of this week's intro song. We did not ask your permission. We do apologise, but then I don't think we've ever asked anyone's permission for the intro song. Don't tell anyone. Don't spread that one. Anyway, thank you very much for downloading the show this week. I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. This week, we just have a win to discuss. Yes, you heard that correct. For the first time since August, we have a win, a home win, just the second home win of 2022. So yay, we're going to talk about that. We're also going to look ahead to our trip to Poland on the weekend. We have all our other usual features on that side of it returns. Jackson 5 also returns this week. But Stu, let's just concentrate on the football. We beat Colchester United 2-1 at the weekend. 1-0 down at half-time to a Kwezi Appiah header. More on that in a moment. Two second-half goals from Josh Davison, one from penalty. Gave us all 3 points. The first time we have conceded the first goal in a game and won since Crewe in 2021, in November 2021, when we won 3-2, having gone 1-0 down. I think that was something like, I think we've been 1-0 down on 15 occasions, or we've conceded the first goal on 15 occasions since then, and failed to win every single time. So ticked off a lot of boxes with that win on Saturday. As I say, a win after conceding first, and we actually held on to a lead despite lots of injury time, something that we've spectacularly failed to do many occasions over the past 18 months. Performance, not great, but does that matter?
No one's going to look at a performance where, well, no one's going to review the performance where I look back through the records. To be fair, we haven't won, but there's many games we had where we led, you know, back in League One, and we didn't hold on to the lead. So ultimately, it just goes down as a win. Was it a great game? No. Was it comfortable? No. Did I enjoy it? No. It was just hard work, because it's really weird, you know, as easy as players forget how to win, so do fans. And I think you just all become nervous. As if you're waiting, sometimes as if you're just waiting for the team to equalise, because you've seen it so many times before. Whereas when you're winning games and you're closing games out quite comfortably, well, you get used to that. And it's like, okay, it's all in hand. But there was, I felt in the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, you could sense the unease and it wasn't as if the ground was bouncing going into the wing, was it? It was just very much just blow the effing whistle.
Before we continue, I must say we do have a slight delay on our connection this evening. We're recording this on Wednesday evening, so we do apologise for at times there's a little bit of interruption on the audio. Unfortunately, we have tried to reset this many times and we're still having a slight issue with that. So we do apologise, but it's not too bad. We'll crack on. And Stu, the point I want to make, you talk about wanting to hold on a nervous last 10, 15 minutes, is something that you've spoken about since the start of the season. Squad depth and substitutes. And part of the reason we perhaps struggled was the fact that Colchester could use all 5 subs, including some man mountains up front. And in the end, what do we? We made the 2 subs in the end. And one of those, Paul Cannon-Bye coming on, was purely just for height in the very, very later stages.
Well, yeah, it was interesting, actually, because our subs actually come due to situations. So Magoma was injured.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was an enforced substitution. And Paul Cannon-Bye come on for Ogundiri, who had just been booked. Just been booked for cynically dragging back the person and trying to swap a shirt too early. And we booked him, I believe. And of course, I don't know if a sub was going to be made, but it just felt like all our substitutions, all 2 of them, were enforced, rather than, if you look at Colchester, it was just a case of who's taller than the person that we're going to bring off. It was just ridiculous. Akinde, Like, he took his shirt off to put on his the tracker thing, like, not a tracker, like, you know what it is, it's not a GPS tracker thing for how much run and stuff like that.
Yeah, the bra.
And he put that on. Bra. I'm just like, I'm just looking how, what size he is, do you know what I mean? And they'd already bought on, I think how they bought on beforehand, but yeah, it just felt like every person was taller. And it led to the, as you know, we're going to discuss the tail of the tape, as they say in boxing, but you know, it led to that last minute panic. And I was panicking. I think I was closing. I think, to be fair, my hands were over my eyes because I just didn't want to watch.
No, we've been there so many times before. You thought that at some point a team wasn't going to equalise in the later stages. Surely we're going to get to that point. And it did actually happen. We needed a Nick Zanev save at the very death to do so, although you would have expected him to make... Well, I don't know. It's a good save. It's a good save because he comes out quickly to narrow the angle, and that's what makes it difficult for the forward, doesn't it? So, but the other issue as well with the panic at the end was the fact that a lot of people in the stadium had no idea how many minutes of injury time had actually been added, because we did not have a fourth official board, numbers board. It had been on the blink previous home games where we could barely read the numbers on the board. And I'm sat in the West Stand right behind it, and we were struggling. We could just make it out. So in other parts of the ground, it must have been totally just not visible. And then on Saturday, no board at all, just added to the sense of panic and confusion.
Yeah, do you know what? I did actually know how long was left because I could see Rocket go. Rocket went to Robin Bedford, to be take away nicknames. Robin Bedford went to the fourth official and then went and into the tunnel and put his fingers up. And now I know he was saying that to Mikey T and Rob Cornell. And I swear I saw him put like a full hand and then two fingers. I'm like, you're joking me. It can't be 7 minutes.
He was swearing at the press box.
But, well, to be fair, I think he's probably trying to swear at the assistant referee. But yeah, I saw that and I was just like, but then of course there's no confirmation, is there? But yeah, well, no, I did see.
Go. Well, I was going to say, well, you can see that tells you how long the delay is on the line. I was going to say, it was announced over the PA, but the PA wasn't working very well. So if you heard it, nobody heard it, basically, but it was announced.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, the scoreboard doesn't then show the additional minutes, does it? I don't think they're allowed to.
No, it does. It did it the first half. It said it came on plus two at the end of the first half. So I couldn't figure out why it didn't at the end, but oh well. Yeah.
It's just, do you know what the thing is? Let's just go back to the old days. You know, we're having a bit of a laugh yesterday. What we were on our WhatsApp group about modern football and the stuff you don't like, and let's just go back to the old boards. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? As if you're trying to, let's just go back to that. Why are we spoiled with a scoreboard? You know, in the old days, I remember the first away game I went to was Shrewsbury Town away in the FA Cup, and they had the old scoreboards which had A, B, C, D on, and those were the fixtures that corresponded to the fixtures in the programme. Let's just go back to that.
Yeah, nice. Simpler times. Didn't need your Sky Sports app on your phone to be checking scores every 5 minutes. I remember back in the old days, if you didn't catch it being announced over the public address system, at full time, you'd wait until either you were back on the car or you overheard it on the bus or the train. I remember once Chris and I, we travelled back from a family holiday in Cornwall, Devon way to watch a 0-0 draw with Everton at Selhurst Park. And we didn't know any scores from any other games until we got back to Cornwall, Devon in time to watch it on Match of the Day. And do you know what? We lived. We survived.
I know. Like I said to you before, isn't it? You know, back in the days, we used to stop sometimes and get the old, it was a pink newspaper that had all the latest scores and stuff like that. And yeah, it was quite exciting. Whereas, like you're saying, nowadays we just look on our apps, especially in the old days when we were always fighting relegation from League One, we spent more time on our phones looking at what was going on elsewhere than we did in front of us.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just thinking about you discussing a trip to Gay Meadow, getting a pink paper. And I was thinking, wow, they were really ahead of their times back then.
Do you know what? Right, Gary Shaw scored in the 38th minute. And the reason I know that is because I was right at the front And they're, you know, like your golden goal and stuff, but they, I think they had their equivalent that day. And this kid was going around the weigh-in showing what time the goal score was. And then I think people just want to throw things at him. But yeah, I remember that very well. And I remember the fact that you talk about great, great grounds. I've never seen so much sand on a pitch. It was like being at Brighton.
Is Brighton sandy? Sort of more stony.
Yeah, true. Well, sandy. There's no sand in this country, is there, to be fair? Well, probably some sand somewhere.
Yeah, there's quite, yeah.
But yeah, let's just say there was, let's just say there was more sand than there was grass on the pitch at Shrewsbury at Game Meadow back in the 1991, I think.
Listeners, I must say, there are times when our connection is so bad. Stu is moving ridiculously slowly on my screen, and it's really bringing Liam Trotter to mind. But let's move on. one question, one tactical point I want to add about Saturday is I've put it on the format as how do you solve a problem like Ayoub Assal? And the reason I'm questioning this one is because Ayoub, in the absence of Nathan Young-Coombs, has been played as a forward, right up top with Josh Davison. I'm not sure the two have struck up a particularly good relationship on the pitch as it stands. That might be me being harsh, but I'm not sure as a front two that they're quite gelled just yet. And we have brought in another player in Courtney Senior, who was unattached, and we've added him to the squad. And he might be someone that ends up playing in a front two, or Carl Hudlin comes in when he's a bit more fit or whatever. At that point, what happens to Ayoub? Does he work in a midfield three the way we set up? Is the 3-5-2 the best system to get the best out of Ayoub Assal? And if not, should we change the system to fit, who is arguably our most creative and talented player?
Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it? Because I don't think we've seen the best of Ayoub Assal yet this season, even though obviously he's got on the score sheet and he got a penalty on Saturday. Me personally, I think he's better coming from a wide position. I think he's more challenging. I think when he hugs the touchline, he can then either come in or go out. He's not as easy to pick up. I think you can swarm around him in the middle. And yeah, I would agree. I don't think he has the greatest of partnerships with Josh Davison, but I don't think that's because I just think it's that Ayoub is just not a natural forward. Should we change the formation? Do you know what? I thought it was a couple of weeks ago, I probably would have said yes. However, I do like, now that we have two wing backs with pace, I think it really now, I think that 3-5-2 could work really well because, you know, if you've got Jack Curry one side, Isaiah Obendiri the other side, potentially Hussein Bider can come in. And I don't think we can play these kids, you know, week in, week out, as I said before. I like the idea of width, but I just think Assal is better coming from a wide position rather than playing central. But hey, look, injuries, we've got injuries galore. I've just been listening to the injury update, and you know, Paulo Sousa's out, Nathan Young-Coombs is out, Will Nightingale, you know, we've got a lot of injuries, haven't we? So I think we're having to move people around, and Assal's probably one of those. But ideally, I think I'd rather play him wide and have Nathan Young-Coombs up top with Josh Davison or Carl Hardlin.
Will Nightingale's injury was what forced the switch on. Well, not just Will Nightingale's injury, but Alex Pierce's as well. Both of them are out. We think Will's going to be out for a good few months, actually, now. Unfortunately, his injury curse has struck again. But that's what leads to Chris Gunter moving to centre-half and Isaac getting a start at right wing-back, doesn't he, as you said there. And it was actually, in the end, it was Lee Brown, Chris Gunter and Riley Towler at centre-half, the three centre-halves. Seemed to be fine. I mean, Colchester aren't very good. And it sounds horrible, but, I mean, our three wins this season have come against teams that have been really, really poor. So it's sometimes difficult to judge. And I think this win, as we said before, I think it was more about getting the win, and psychologically, hopefully that will relax us a bit and we'll push on from here. But it will face a lot sterner tests. Similarly, we'll play a lot better than that, than we did on Saturday, and lose games. It's just the way football works sometimes. But anyway, sorry, that's just me updating you with why perhaps Isaac comes in. And as you say, Stu, we're not expecting him to play every week because he's still very, very young, but a lot of pace, and he doesn't shirk any challenges or duels or anything like that. And he made, and he referenced it earlier, the booking he picked up was a very sensible tactical foul. And I'm going to try and avoid having my rant about the state of top flight football in this country, but I was afflicted with watching some of the Manchester derby on the weekend, which I hated it for various reasons. But I did notice one of Man City's goals was at like the fourth goal. I think they broke away. And I was like, just foul him. Just foul him. Just foul him.
Haaland on the halfway lines.
Right. And I was like, why did no one foul him? Simple. And that's what Isaac did. He had the nous to go, boom, foul him, take it. And then from the free kick from there, they did absolutely nothing with it.
Yeah, it was spot on. It was spot on. And it's just been streetwise, isn't it? You know, and I think, to be fair, I think Isaac Ogundiri and Jack Curry on either side, obviously academy products, seem quite savvy in terms of that gamesmanship and stuff like that. I think they're great finds. We've got to be careful that we don't rely on them too much. Chris Gunter coming in. Do you know what? It's really weird. We've done the post-match show and we were talking about Chris Gunter, and I really couldn't think of anything he did well, but I couldn't think of anything he'd done wrong either.
No,
it was one of those. It's just solid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was just solid. No frills. So in my opinion, that's great. You know, I think he isn't a right wing back. And I quite like that pairing. You know, Lee Brown has had a really good couple of weeks. And Taylor, it's just comfortable, isn't he? What I worry about Taylor is I don't think he's going to be here past January because of the way Bristol City do their loans. But if he gets us past, that's fine. But, you know, looking at injuries, you know, great news is Alex Goodyard is back in training, probably a couple of weeks off. You've also got Hussein Bailo, who there's a lot of people that think really highly of him, who come in and are like having new players. Like, you know, let's be fair, having Alex Goodyard come into that midfield.
Yeah.
Absolute. It's like, it's probably, you know, it'd be your best signing of the season, isn't it? On that. So it's like I say, it's mucking around. You're right. We beat Colchester. They weren't great. But they can serve their subs. Like I say, it's Frank Nouvelle. They had better subs. They had taller subs. Felt they had better subs going forward than we did.
More experienced, established subs than we did.
But do you know what? When they made those three subs, though, I felt those three subs they made at one point felt weakened them, if I'm being honest with you. And they brought on, obviously, a former one of our academy, Osama Ashley, who went to West Ham and then found his way to Colchester, gave away the penalty, and looked way off the pace. Like the penalty he gave away where Sal jumped in and took the ball, it was like he was winding his leg up to try and move it. It was so slow.
Yeah.
And it felt like they actually hindered them with the substitutions. But yeah.
Kwezi Appiah somehow managed to last 97 minutes and gave us a wave goodbye as he went down the tunnel. I made the point on Twitter that perhaps Kwezi, if you're going to do the cut your ears in front of the home fans of your former club, perhaps wait until full time when you've won the game, because otherwise you look a bit of a tit. And he looked a bit of a tit by the end of it, because well done, you scored a goal, but you lost the game. What would you rather have? Every striker always says, I'd rather I didn't score, but we won. So I'm sure he'd have rather have savoured a victory at Plough Lane rather than getting a goal but losing.
Yeah. Anyway. And do you know what? Very quickly, the goal we conceded is a very basic goal.
Yeah.
But it is the weakness of playing the wing-backs, because we obviously got done, you know, straight ball wide, dipped back stick. And if a forward is going to attach themselves to either the fullback, you know, Isaac or Jack Curry. And that's the... It's not blaming Isaiah Wunderi, but if you're going to get, if any forward is going to attach themselves, they're not going to attach themselves to the centre back, so they're going to get on the back stick. So that's just something we need to be aware of. It was a very basic goal and typical. We all knew it. We all knew Kwezi was going to score.
He didn't want to celebrate, apparently, he said afterwards, which is a lie.
It is a blatant lie, isn't it? Did you see him, though? I don't know if you saw on the highlights. He scored the goal, cupped his ears, and then he gave a reaction. He was like, I think he obviously got some abuse back. And he'd done a very quick reaction. He was like, what are you doing? Wait, why? Do you know what I mean? Well, you've just done your cupped ears, you plum.
Yeah, mate. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
We won the game. That's all that matters. We won the game. One other thing I want to talk about, which is going to lead us, Stu, That's on the slightly early side, but we've got some other things to talk about. Was the attendance, and there was a rail strike on Saturday, and I think
was there
the quoted attendance was perhaps inflated by non-attending season ticket holders, because there were lots and lots of empty seats, certainly around me in the west stand, and certainly quite obviously in the east stand. But my point is more to do with travel, less football. Okay. So my dad, in the end, he abandoned ship. He was trying to drive into Wimbledon. The traffic was horrendous. Couldn't even get on the A3. Could not even get on the A3. So we're driving round, trying to find different ways to actually somehow get on the road to Wimbledon. And I've noticed this before. So this wasn't the first time I've thought this, but this now has a football-related reason for me to bring up. And if you don't want to listen to something that's totally unfootball-related for a few minutes, listeners, just fast forward. But the amount of, and I was beaten to this on Twitter, bizarrely, this was one of those random things. Peter Bowles, he put on Twitter about the fact that our streets these days, they might as well just rename them car parks, because that's all they are, all right? Absolutely everywhere you go. And when I saw that tweet, I just got into work and I just looked on my phone before I sat down to get on with stuff. And I was walking in thinking about the number of cars on the road, thinking about me discussing it on the podcast, and then Peter, just one of those serendipitous almost moments where he tweeted about it. But yes, Stu, far too many cars sitting on the road doing absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. What an absolute waste of everyone's money. And also what a horrendous sight and ruining the street scene and the street landscapes of many roads, making public transport absolutely impossible, because you're only basically bus routes, which would be good. If you want to cure global warming, by the way, don't scrap cars, don't scrap petrol cars for electric cars. That's not going to do anything, okay? You want to learn how the electricity for batteries is sourced, and you won't think it's very environmentally conscious or socially conscious for that reason. Get loads of cars off the road and have proper public transport instead. But we can't do that because the amount of these stupid tin boxes sat on the road, ruining the scene for everyone, getting in everyone's way, and costing a lot of people money and a lot of waste of money. So anyway, that's my rant. We're far too over-reliant on the car.
Yeah, do you know what? It was a nightmare, because I think I got three buses and a tube. I was really embarrassed by the tube as well, right? So I got really excited going on the tube, right? Random. I got to Morden and I could have got a bus to Wimbledon. And I was like, hang on a second, that's the underground station. I'll go on the underground. I've been on the underground for ages, really excited. And then I started to queue up for a ticket. And that's when the embarrassment came on. The guy goes, "You got a debit card?" I went, "Yep." He went, "Yeah, just do that." And I went, So I then went and tried to explain it. So I've been on the tube for ages, and I thought, just stop digging a hole, Stu. But I quite enjoyed it. But the trouble was then I realised I didn't have any signal. I was like, what am I going to do? Like, what am I going to do?
Read a book.
I didn't have a book. Everything was on my phone. So, yeah, and then got to Broadway, and then waited ages for a bus. It just felt I was waiting forever, and the traffic was rubbish, absolute rubbish. Yeah, and do you know what? I had the same journey back, and if we'd lost, it wasn't the most exciting journey on the way back, even though we'd won the games. There wasn't really much to get excited about, apart from the final score. But that would have been a longer journey if we hadn't won the game. But yeah, train strikes, isn't it? Train strikes. What can you do? Everyone's striking nowadays.
What would have made the traffic easier is if a lot of the roads that buses were on weren't having to negotiate through lots of parked cars on the road. That's just what I'm saying.
Too many cars.
Too many cars.
Too many cars. Just get out and walk.
Do you know, honestly, we used to go, like I say, the aforementioned Devon/Cornwall holiday that we've been on, used to laugh back in the day, because obviously when you're driving through the fields and there's one track roads, and if someone's coming the other direction, you have to reverse to make room for them to go past. And we'd always laugh at them and say, how do people put up with this every day that live down here? But it's the same now, if not worse, in the suburbs and in the centre of London as well, because we're basically, every road is a one lane road now because of the amount of parked cars there. And it becomes an absolute nuisance. But anyway, that's my rant for today. On that side of it.
Everyone's got two cars nowadays. Well, I tell you what, I will say the electric cars do concern me because I can't hear them. They just start. Like, there's no, like, it just feels like they just come from nowhere. It's like a silent assassin.
They are. They are going to cause problems. And what people will start to do, because we live in a clown world already, people will start giving them novelty sounds to replace the engine sound so people can hear them. That's what's going to happen, Stu. So you're going to get all sorts of ridiculous noises that cars will be making to signal that they are on the road.
There seems to be a lot where I live. There seems to be a lot of electric cars. And I'm trying to teach Thomas now what's left and right and look before you go. And I can't now say to him, you'll hear it, because you won't bloody hear it.
No.
It just seems to start from behind you, and you're like, where did that come? It's just like, yeah, can we have some sort of, I don't know, warning? But then, to be fair, my son spends more time on tripping over. I've never known such a clumsy person. Well, actually, my wife is clumsy. But the other day, Thomas tripped over 4 times.
He thinks he's playing for Wickham.
To be fair, he mugged me off the other day, because I said to him, I said, when you walk in, lift your feet. You know what I mean? Like, and he exaggerates it, doesn't he? And it mugs me off with exaggerating lifting his feet. But he's so clumsy. Absolutely clumsy.
Well, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to add to that,
Well, the thing was, I have started saying she fell over, but I need to make sure I don't do that, because that's not funny. And he repeat it at the school.
Well, that's the worry, that he will repeat it. That's what he wants to try and avoid. But, I'll leave you to sort that one out. This is going to be a horrendous edit for me this evening, Stu. I'm not going to lie because of this connection. But anyway.
Right. This will go out on Saturday.
It will, see, by the time I've cleared up all this delays and everything. But anyway, right, football talk. Jackson 5, Stu, this week. Josh Davison, in order of Josh Davison scoring twice for us on Saturday, wearing the number 9, I thought I'd look back and see who were the last, before Josh Davison, which 5 players wore the number 9 for Wimbledon. This is really difficult. And if I was in your position right now, I would not have a clue. Well, I think I'd have got 2. But anyway, 6 guesses. Who were the last 5 players before Josh Davison to wear the 9 for Wimbledon?
This is stupid now, isn't it? Because they wear squad members, don't they? Tom Elliott?
That is 1.
Okay, that's 2. I was going to say Roscoe the same. No. Who was a player we signed in the first season in League 2 with Jack Midson?
He's not one of the 5, but you're thinking of Byron Harrison.
No, I'm thinking about, is it Adamayo? Oh, I can't think. Adamayo.
Oh, Charlie Adamino.
That's the one.
Yeah.
He's not one of them, though.
No.
it's Tom Elliott. Kwezi Appiah
was one of them. You have 3 more guesses.
That's really obvious. That's a really most obvious one. Kedwell. I'm going to say Kedwell, but I don't think he was a number 9.
No. How many Jack guesses? Midson. So hold. Well, no, it wasn't Jack Midson either. I think you've got 1 more guess. You've got 2 so far, and you've got 1 more guess.
Adi Aziz.
No. Do you know what? You're going to kick yourself on one of these, and the other ones, you're going to go, oh, my God. So the one you're going to kick yourself on is Ollie Palmer.
I already forgot about him. He's gone. He's nothing to me now.
And he lives in Wales, and hears me ranting about electric cars, and they don't even have electricity in Wales. Then you've got Matt Tubbs.
Oh, yeah, crikey. But again, I forgot about him. He deserted us.
And how about this one? I reckon we could be here all evening and you wouldn't get this one. Danny Hilton.
Did he really?
Danny Hilton, because he joined us after Michael Smith had left, returned from his loan, and took on the number 9 that vacated by Smith. So there you go.
It felt, and that's why Tom Ellis, I felt it had to be going back to League 2 days, because we seem to have had, no one wants to have a number 9 shirt anymore, do they?
No, they've all got some ridiculous, large, high numbers. But
like 33, like, who does 33?
Who does 33? 3 times 3 is 9, though. right. We haven't touched on it, but very quick mention, because I'm not sure we can really say too much about it this time being, but obviously before news since we last did a podcast is that Danny Macklin has been appointed Managing Director? Is that the official?
Managing Director.
Yeah, so he starts on the 1st of November.
That's correct, yes.
So, yeah, good luck to Danny. Like I said a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, just put him in place and let him do what he needs to do, and let's give as little interference as possible and let him concentrate on doing the job, because that's what we need. We need some direction and someone to come in and sort some things out. So we have to give him the green light to do that as he sees fit. So we wish him well. It's a good appointment, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is. And yeah, I think you're right. We'll give him some space. I think he's one that will go on podcasts and stuff, and we've got more than enough podcasts now, haven't we? So we will. I think you're right. I think we're going to wait our turn and probably catch up with him after Christmas and when he's had a chance to get his feet under the table, because he's got a hell of a job, but he's got a hell of a lot of experience as well. So good appointment. Really pleased with that. And let's look forward to see what he brings. I'm sure he did well.
Before he officially takes up post, we have a Don's Trust SGM, which is next Thursday, the 13th of October. We have a this is Keir. I was about to say it's at King's Meadow. Wow. Oh dear. Well,
if it is, then what's going on?
Maybe it is. They've got it's because they've got a big screen that has sound. No, it is at Plough Lane, and it will be 7:30 start the next Thursday. Three members resolutions. I think just want to reference them here quickly. Resolution one requested that the second floor hospitality area should be open to all supporters after matches. I think that will get passed without any particular hassle. Resolution three. Is members resolution collection of diversity data of Don's Trust members, that Don's Trust membership diversity data should be sought and collected annually as part of all signups and renewals, which I think, you know, that will get through. I can't see why that wouldn't get passed.
Yeah,
that'll go. And then resolution number two, our connection is really bad, isn't it? Resolution number two, about kits. If there are any proposed changes, plans to kit term lengths away from the previously established 2 years lifespan per kit, then these proposals, along with supporting information, should be brought to DT members for discussion and voting before being implemented. So this is just to make sure, really, that, you know, if we ever move away from having a new kit outside of the 2 year cycle, which is the usual way of doing things, where we'd have a home and away kit for 2 years and then a new one every 2 years, and then the intervening year we'd have a new third kit. If there's a change to that for whatever reason, then it should run past members. The problem I have with this one is the club have said that. They said, we have previously done that system, two new kits every 2 years and then the third kit every two other years. But the problem with this one is when you get new contracts, when you get new kit suppliers, because that's what throws the whole system into disarray. And that's what happened when we moved for the first time from Tempest to Admiral, if you remember. We got three new kits for a year. And I actually think there was one kit. It was a white third kit, was it? That we only had for one season because of the... Then it got into the whole...
We had a one-off, didn't we, for Bristol Rovers game?
Yeah, but this was past that. That was still on the Tempest. This was... When we moved to Admiral for the first time, we had the promotion-winning kit. And then we moved... We got the watermelon kit the following season, which knocked out... I think it was actually the second kit that got bumped after only a year to keep up the alternative year's new kit. So anyway, in theory, yes, absolutely, we'll vote for this to run past. But I think contractual issues with kit suppliers is the fly in the ointment on this one.
Do you know what? I've looked at it and I've seen the argument, of course, in terms of cost. It's a weird one now, isn't it? Because I'm at a stage where I'm thinking we need as much money as we can. And a lot of revenue now is going through the club shop. And I've got a four-year-old who's not on, well, he's starting to ask for things now, but not football kits. But if I can't afford it, I won't get it. That's sort of my attitude with it. But I don't want us to restrict sales. Then that's maybe been me being a bit self-centered, but I'm just thinking around cost and stuff like that. The more kit out there, the more money it's going to come through the club shop, which is probably making decent money at the moment. But I don't know, maybe that's me looking at the wrong angle. But, you know, with emotions, they will be, you know, on the evening, they will be discussed, and I'll be keen to see what's, you know, what's said within that. But at the moment, I'm a bit on the fence. I'm sitting more to a no than a yes.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, with this one, I think the resolution simply is that if there is going to be a change to that, to the regular pattern of new kits, that it's brought to the attention of members in advance. And I think if it's brought to people in advance and explained why that's the case, I think that would, I don't see it change. I don't see any changes. Do you know what I mean? I think people will go along with it. Yeah.
But remember how easy to do that? Because remember we were chatting to Jonesy, weren't we, on one of the first podcasts this season, and he was talking about the timelines.
Yeah.
So how easy is it to do it? I get it, but actually, could we have had a vote this time? And if we had a vote and said no, who makes the executive decision? Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's a challenging one. I get why it's been raised. I need to hear it more.
Well, that'll be voted on the 13th of October, as I said. Before that, on the 8th of October, we travel to Warsaw in Poland for our European fixture. Warsaw currently 15th, a place and a point above us in the table, but they have played a game more. That game was on Tuesday night. They beat Northampton 1-0 at six. No, not six fields. No, because they were at home. So it was at the Beskot Stadium. And they had got a point at Stockport on Saturday as well. It's a tough game, but I'm cheered by them winning on Tuesday because teams rarely win two home games back to back in such a short space of time. So I'm quite happy with that. Manager is Michael Flynn, who was at Newport and did well at Newport for a number of years and seasons. And they weren't happy when he left, as we saw when he returned there recently with their fans. Daniel Johnson scored the winner on Tuesday night, and he has scored seven goals. His third top scorer in League Two currently with seven goals so far. He is on loan from Mansfield, which I can't quite get my head around. Anyway, prediction, Stu, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
I've got a feeling we're going to win. I did see your comment about teams don't win Tuesday, Saturday, and I quite like that. I'm going to go for a 3-2 win.
Just like it was 2017 all over again. Or maybe 2018, one or the other. I can't remember. One of them. Anyway, elsewhere in League Two on the weekend, what has caught your...
All I know is I remember wearing shorts and I smashed my leg. There's quite a few, actually, and I've lost a few.
At this point, listeners, we have to say, who knows what you've heard, by the way, from that little exchange, because we didn't hear either of what... We couldn't make out what either one of us was saying. Our connection is so bad. And we only literally have a minute left, so we have to be quick.
Yeah, Bradford Stockport and Doncaster Leighton Orient. Just see how Doncaster bounced. Sorry, how Leighton Orient bounced back after their first defeat.
Yeah, and Doncaster as well, because they lost at Hartlepool, which was Hartlepool's first win of the season on Tuesday night as well. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting... clash. Colchester Harrogate for me, because two teams at the bottom of the table, Colchester really need to pick up 3 points.
I'm looking upwards now.
You're moving on up.
Hey.
We are moving on out, because it is time to go. 300 episodes, and having worked really hard over the years on improving our audio on this celebratory 300th show, it's all gone to shit. Anyway, thank you very much for joining me, Stu.
No problem.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Updates from Warsaw on Twitter at 9YRSPodcast. That is it for this week. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last, 2 + 2 = 4. And we shall speak to you again some point, hopefully on a better connection, next week.